Thank you for that introduction, and let me introduce myself. My name is Mike Keough, and the name of the program is Education Matters. And with me, I have three guests from the Kenosha Education Association. And I wonder if you'd mind introducing yourself, starting with you, Anne, so that the, you know, we don't have television here. We can't put prompts under your names, so it gives the opportunity for the audience to associate the name with the voice.
Sure, no problem. I am Ann Knapp. I am a kindergarten teacher at Gravado Elementary, as well as the president of the Kenosha Education Association.
And my name is Kendra Copen. I'm the communication specialist at the Kenosha Education Association.
I'm Chris Perillo. I'm the interim executive director at the Kenosha Education Association.
All right, and this is a show that we have done. This is, I think, the third year we actually that we have done this on the eve of the new school year. We try and create an opportunity for the KEA to come here and talk about things that have happened since the previous year and concerns and aspirations that they have for the next year. So, Anne, as the president, why don't you start us off?
Sure, no problem. Thanks for having us again this year, Mike. Really appreciate that. We've had quite a few changes since we've been here last year. And this is always an exciting time of the year, but we have some exciting things happening at the Kenosha Education Association. Our previous vice president and treasurer termed out, so we have two new officers joining me. Jill Jensen, she is a primary teacher over at Pleasant Prairie, and Mindy Duford, who is a kindergarten teacher at Jeffrey, so representing the elementary level. And they are very excited to be joining us as officers. They have been building reps previously. And this summer, working with them and a couple other strong union members, we came up with our new slogan for the KEA, which is Educate, Unite, and Inspire. Educate, of course, because that is our passion as educators, whether it's from secretary in the office to the ESPs, the teachers, everyone, that's what we're there for, all the students. And Unite, because we want to come together as a collective voice. We also want to bring getting community involvement and hear from them, get them involved to love our schools, embrace everything that we do, and, you know, tackle any social justice issues that come up and affect them, which ultimately affects our students and us in the classroom. And Inspire, because that is part of what we do as role models for students and other educators in a district. We inspire them to become better professionals and help our students grow into what they are. We also had a summer organizing program that Kendra will be speaking about. That is going very well. We've had some excited members working on that. Their energy is just very catching. I love it. And Chris Perillo welcomed us. He's a former KUSD teacher, and we love having his enthusiasm and go-getter attitude. It is just amazing. Love working with these people.
Okay, Kendra. Maybe we should start by talking about what you've been doing this last summer.
Yeah, so like Ann said, the summer is always a really exciting time for us because that gives us an opportunity to kind of rediscover what we want to do for the year. And specifically this year, we are running a summer organizing program that's been run in Milwaukee and in some other regions around Wisconsin, and they've had a lot of success with it. And so with some help from everyone, we were able to establish this program and hire four organizers for the summer to primarily focus on identifying issues and leaders and buildings throughout KUSD. And so the main focus of that is to have meaningful conversations with all of these people in these buildings. And this summer, we've been able to have over 150 conversations with people. And those conversations have helped us identify what people are really struggling with throughout the district and what they want fixed. So Chris, when he got here, was able to help us kind of launch a campaign for the summer and that we'll be carrying out through the fall. And he can talk about that a little more. But some of the biggest issues that we were able to identify this year have been the lack of a salary schedule and the steps and lanes, class size, and the lack of prep time that teachers have. They feel like they're be giving a lot of responsibilities that don't necessarily make them better teachers and allow them to spend quality time with their students.
Okay, Chris, why don't you reintroduce yourself to the Sure. To Kenosha.
Well, hi, Kenosha. I'm Chris Perillo. I served previously a number of roles in the Kenosha Education Association, and most recently I've been working in Milwaukee as a assistant executive director of the Milwaukee Teachers Education Association. But I'm really glad to be back in Kenosha. We have a really strong leadership team here, and we're doing great things. So far this summer, we've been really focusing on developing new curriculum courses for members to help them do things in their classroom better. And I guess that's the kind of underlying theme behind all of it. And there's a lot of things that you can do to help make people's educational experience better. One of those things, we just recently had a seminar about, as part of the Degrees Not Debt program, where we were able to give a lot of information to members and potential members about ways to decrease their student loan burden. And for new teachers especially, this is an enormous issue. The student loan payments they're making can be really crushing as far as, you know, helping them get off the ground in an economic, you know, way, you know, whether their goals are for home ownership or whatever. They can really be kind of devastated by student loan debt. And by getting information out to our members about student loan forgiveness and different debt repayment plans, we feel it really makes a difference for our members, that it takes a significant amount of stress off of them. They're able to focus then more on what they're doing in the classroom and worry less about getting a summer job or getting a second job or things like this. And that can make a huge difference for people. We just found out that one of the participants was able to move to an income-based repayment plan that can basically cut their student loan payments in half. And if you can imagine, if you're paying, you know, $400, $500 a month in student loan payments, having that cut in half, what a huge economic unburdening that would be for you. And that's kind of what all of our programs are about. One of the pieces that came out of the survey was about more prep time. And when people talk about having more prep time, it's kind of like a bellwether issue where people are saying they don't have enough time in general to be the educator that they know they can be in the classroom. And our goal is to help them by using our resources and assets to do things that they're already doing in more efficient ways, kind of kill two birds with one stone when it comes to things like their professional licensure process or their plan for professional growth, educator effectiveness. There's ways we can merge a lot of these programs together in a environment that's safe, that's run by teachers for teachers, well, and that they don't have to worry about, you know, saying the wrong thing or having, you know, some scrutiny on their situation or what they're saying or talking about or interested from a different party. And so that's kind of one of the main focuses that we have. We think that there's always room for growth in our course schedule. And even just today, we're talking about, you know, options for teacher wellness and things like that. Like, you know, for times of the year when people are feeling, you know, overwhelmed, stressed, there's things that innovative programs that have happened in other places that we'll be trying to bring forward to Kenosha educators.
Okay. One of the columns I read every week is Alan Borsak's column in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He's the commentator on education at my alma mater, Marquette Law School. And he started his column that he writes every year at the beginning of the school year by setting himself the assignment that he would work out in his column of finding things to be optimistic about during the cool school year, given all the problems that have beset us in the last few years. Maybe we can start there. What do you see as being something that we can be optimistic about at this point?
Well, I think to start with, one of the biggest things is that our members are optimistic about the school year right now. And we've had a lot of encounters with people that are excited to get back to work with kids. This isn't the end of the summer. You know, there's a lot of funny posts on Facebook from teachers about the end of the summer, but the reality is they're excited to get back in the classroom. They've been working in the summer to develop, you know, new ideas and new things they want to bring forward. They've been talking with colleagues, or they learned things the previous year they can implement. They're excited to do the work because they love what they do. And so that is something that's kind of, I think, I don't know if it's unique to the education field, but certainly, you know, among our members, the beginning of the year is a huge, uplifting, exciting time. There's nothing more exciting to teachers than watching the kids come into the school and watching them file into the classroom and, you know, starting things off. And people are out there right now making bulletin boards, probably right as we speak, and getting things ready in their classrooms because they're anticipating having a great year. So I don't think we can – that's where I would start with number one. I don't know if we'll get to 10 in the show, but but I think that that's something that's important for people to know, that people love the work they do. They love working with kids. They want to make sure those kids have the best experience that they possibly can and get the most out of their education in Kenosha.
I think that makes outreach, specifically for the KEA, when people all go back to school, outreach between new educators and veteran educators becomes much easier, and there's an opportunity for people to collaborate together to talk about, like, best practices and, like, working and learning environments, and how one of the things that KEA has been focusing on is we want people to know that the KEA is a place where they can come and have those discussions, because we know in the summer people go on vacation, a lot of stuff's going on, but the KEA is a place where people can set aside time and step away from the stress of the classroom and come and just socialize with other people from the district that you don't necessarily get the time to actually talk to.
One thing I should probably add at this point is that every item that Alan listed in his column had a but on the end of it. For example, the first one was the governor may provide more school aides in the budget that he's doing, and that was followed by something that said, but is he likely to do that? That's an open question. He got to the last item, though, and the last item was one where he had no reservations. And the last item was basically, he said, the one thing that that we can count on and be optimistic about is the dedication and professionalism of teachers and their intention to make whatever they have to deal with work. Any reactions to that agreement? I'm assuming you all agree to that.
Yes, I agree that teachers do. They'll take on just about any task. There is a point, though, where their plates become too full and the ask needs to go, you know, be withdrawn a little, because then you're thinning out the profession, you know, the strength of the teacher in the classroom. So, yes, they will tackle anything. They are, you know, ready to do it just to help students. But we also want to be careful with how much we ask, because we don't want to jeopardize the education of our students. There's my but. So there is. That one isn't unconditional.
Well, you mentioned, Kendra, the new students and new teachers and working with new teachers. One of the things, you know, without pointing the finger of blame at anyone, that has befallen K through 12 education has been budget considerations that have resulted in a lot of veteran teachers leaving and a higher percentage, a significantly higher percentage of new teachers who come with a lot of enthusiasm but need some help. And the ratio of those new teachers to the experienced teachers is creating some problems and adding additional stresses to the veteran teachers, would you say?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think that, you know, the teaching profession, as people used to think of it, has changed significantly. And it may have been that when listeners to this program went to school, that, you know, if they had siblings, that they'd expect that their siblings would have the same teachers. Or even in some cases, when they had their own children, that their own children may have those same teachers. And the nature of the nature of public education has changed significantly, where that's increasingly unlikely. There's significant pressure on new teachers, you know, financially with the work they're undertaking and the limits that are being placed on them through state laws to be more transient and to pursue, you know, moving to different districts to for economic gain. And in some cases, that's the only way that can be achieved. Obviously, that's a bread and butter issue for our members. And, you know, like was mentioned earlier, the number one issue that came back from the survey of our members was the lack of steps in the pay scale and those kind of things. You know, right now in Kenosha, if you are a newer teacher and decide to get your master's degree, you don't get any credit for that from Kenosha Unified School District. But if you go to any other district, you would. And that's problematic. And we want to work with the Kenosha Unified School District to develop innovative ways to change that, to attract and retain quality educators here in Kenosha, to make sure that if someone wants to be a career lifelong teacher in Kenosha, that they are able to do so without reservations or hesitation, without having to worry about, you know, moving every couple of years to a different district or, you know, because if they want to improve their financial situation or what have you, that we think Kenosha is a great place and that teachers are an important part of the community. We want to help to work to preserve that.
I'd also like to add that the turnover is also a concern on the family end, because at the kindergarten level, I always have parents who want to know, they expect, you know, which teachers are going to be there when their child moves up to the next grade. They like their school to be like an extended family. They like to have confidence in when my child gets to that grade, they're going to have that teacher or one of these, you know, few that are there. And they become disengaged when it's constantly new teachers and they can't get to know anybody and feel like they're all a team, as, you know, for educating their child.
I'd like to add something to that too, from my experience at Bullitt, because of my position there as a support volunteer through a federal program. I get to continue to work with students through consecutive years as they move along. I was really impressed with what an enormous advantage that gives me in working with them, especially with troubled kids. Because they've come to count on me, sort of like an uncle or something. I'm not sure exactly what, but we begin the school year with a familiarity held over from the previous year, and a confidence level and a comfort level talking to each other, and it gives me an opportunity to provide them more of an educational service and for them to have somebody that they can trust and somebody they can talk to about things.
Absolutely.
Building a strong relationship with students is key to their success. And looping is one of those things. I couldn't tell you which schools do that now, you know, in Kenosha, but I'm sure that some do those types of programs. But if you aren't able to retain teachers, then you're not going to be able to have an effective looping program. And it's going to, you know, you're going to have different people in different roles and might as well be unlooped, I guess, traditional or whatever it's called. But, you know, those things are key. Those things are key. It does, like, as you mentioned earlier, there is stresses that occur with, I don't want to say a loss of veteran educators, but going back to Ann's point earlier about the there's limits that people have to their ability to, you know, impact their colleagues, to work with their peers, to provide professional growth and opportunities, and, you know, while still maintaining a high, you know, performance level in their classrooms. And when people are, you know, pressed in those ways, they, you know, things start coming up and there's problems that happen. One of the things that, you know, our curricular coordination we're going to be doing this fall is going to be focused on helping people, you know, hopefully take care of some of the issues that they might have otherwise had difficulty with or might have been consuming their time or their thoughts, so they can focus back on other things to help improve their practice rather than worry about, you know, these other issues that we can help them with.
That goes back to something you commented on earlier, and that was prep time. Mm-hmm. Because what I hear from people what I get from in feedback from our website, our Facebook site, very often is that why should teachers need prep time in school isn't this just time for them to socialize and goof off or something like that? Why can't they be doing this at home or after school or something like that? And it really is important to have this time in the school day, isn't it? And in the school building and with when you're surrounded by your fellow professionals, isn't it?
Well, there's two aspects to that, I think. One is that if you have an expectation that you have a professional learning community, that you are under the expectation that the professionals in that community are going to be working for the betterment of that community. And whenever I hear people skeptical that teachers are going to goof off during that time, it really just doesn't make any sense to me. I think it's almost kind of pejorative. There's people who are working in school, when they have time to work on things, have an enormous number of things to work on. There is no shortage of things that they can't, you know, accomplish and get done. And also to have access to colleagues, to talk with them, to plan, to develop, you know, longer-term things, to talk about ideas, to troubleshoot problems with students or assignments or, you know, anything that's going on in their rooms is just an enormous value to teachers. And there's, for some reason, there's a persistent idea that if you give someone 5 minutes, they're just going to, I don't know, like do a dance for 5 minutes instead of be working. And it's a troublesome concept that we're trying to overcome. We know that people who have access to prep time can invest that time in producing higher quality lessons, developing higher quality outcomes for the students they're working with. They can make contacts to parents more easily. They can, all these kind of things that are so important for the school community they can help participate in. And that the idea that people are afraid to let them have that time because of fear that they're going to goof off is really kind of demeaning to a lot of educators.
I think of the, naturally because of where we are, I think of the parallel to radio. in radio, a 4-hour shift is considered to be a really long one because you are performing. You have multiple functions to do during that time. And then, although you may spend 7 or 8 hours at that station, the rest of the time you are not on the air.
Yeah.
You're doing other things. From the beginning, teaching has struck me as having parallels with that, because when you're a teacher in the classroom, you're a performer, you're a presenter, you are managing the classroom, and it is a really an intense experience. People who have never done it really can't appreciate how intense an experience that is.
Yeah.
And you do need a break during the day when you can do something else other than be choreographing a classroom.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's all these questions come up. You know, if you don't have any prep time, then when do you coordinate with your special education teacher about the IEPs for your students? When does that happen? Is it supposed to happen when you're supposed to be eating lunch? You're supposed to be spending time with your family. You know, when does those things occur? And you know, that's just one example, and there's dozens and dozens of other, you know, things that teachers have to do that happen behind the scenes. All kinds of, well, you, I'm sure everyone knows about the bureaucracy of a school.
Mm-hmm.
It's thick, and it's a lot of work. There's a lot of numbers, a lot of papers, a lot of discussion. And then on top of that, you have, you know, your professional development. You have the work you're doing with your department or grade level leaders, your professional learning community, and then on top of that, there's a whole other layer of, you know, things that your parents, you know, in the parent community that you're trying to, you know, work with your school and your in the school classroom, or I'm sorry, the school community, and your, you know, classroom community. There's no end to the opportunities for work for teachers to do, and when they don't have prep time, it really pins teachers against their own ideas for what good teaching looks like, and makes them have to make bad decisions about what things they're going to focus on and what things they're not. And then for people who really care about public education, that is a really difficult and tough choice, because they feel there isn't a good one, and any choice they make, they're going to be compromising the integrity of their work, and it's not going to have the results that they want or they know they can achieve or that they think the students they work with deserve. I've been a teacher for many years myself, and maybe there are a couple times when I was a teacher that I walked a little slower to go get a cup of coffee during my prep time than others, but there are reasons for that that every teacher goes through with the students they work with and their expectations. But most of the time on prep was spent as, you know, oh my gosh, thank heavens I have this time to get some of these things done, so I'm not going to have to worry about tonight or next week or what have
you. That's usually like the fastest part of the day as well, because there is so much to try to cram into that short amount of time.
It does go fast quick.
Yes. Lesson planning, if you want to do, you know, have really great lessons, you want to research and you need to be able to differentiate for the different students that you have in the class with different learning styles, different learning abilities, it's intense. And you want to do the best job you can when you get up there in front of those students, so we need to have that time to plan that.
Well, and when you're a new teacher, all of those things that Ann and Chris just mentioned, that's incredibly overwhelming, especially if you're entering the profession and your first introduction into teaching is all of these things, and you have no idea that this is going to get better or that it was ever better. This is just like, well, this is what teaching is about. And so people wonder why there's such a high turnover rate or why people are leaving education. It's because when you're brand new and you mm-hmm. have to deal with all of these things and you don't have a mentor or someone, a community that you can go to because you don't have time to do that, then it's hard to convince yourself to try and stay and put up with all of those things.
It is an exhausting profession, but yet very rewarding as you see the growth of your students. But there are, it's got to be high 90% of educators who give up their own time at home outside of school, so they take away time from their own, spending it with their own family or their children who might need help with their schoolwork, just to be able to meet the demands of this profession.
How would you assess then the state of morale among teachers at this point of where we're at after so many years since Act 10 and the continual changes that have been coming down the road for the last several years?
The ones I've encountered still have the passion, but they're burning out. They're worn out. That happens quickly. They feel like there's too much on their plate, too many demands at once.
I think it's really obvious with the turnover rate of the veteran teachers. I think more than anything, that really speaks to, you know, the impact of the state's influence in the local education process. If you're a veteran teacher, and teachers are teachers because they love what they do, and if you're a veteran and you can't do what you love to do anymore, that's a problem. And you, if you don't feel comfortable doing that anymore, that's a huge issue. I mean, if everyone loved teaching so much, there'd be a million veteran teachers and no one knew would ever be able to get a job. But people have gotten to the point where I think what Ann was talking about is really key. This time of the year, I think the morale is enormously high. Like if you did a poll of people fired up about the year, everyone's going to say, yes, I am. And they are fired up about it because it's a really big deal. This is the best. You wait till the end of the year and you ask a veteran teacher about, and they're going to talk to you about what their motivations are for succeeding or for the future, what they want to do, what their plan is, what their five-year plan is, you know. And, you know, we all know teachers who, you know, there's some teachers here in Kenosha have taught till their mid-70s, yes. You know, and that's great, but very few, very rare, increasingly rare, that people are working past their retirement rate to retirement age where they can access their pension, their benefits for any reason. And I think that really speaks to the nature of the changes that have occurred. And, you know, attracting and retaining quality educators is key focus of the Kenosha Education Association, as are all, you know, unions in the state. And it's a big issue. We want to improve that. We want to bring education back where teachers are respected for the work they do. The teaching isn't just because you're in the front of the kids for, you know, 7.5 hours a day. It's about all the things you bring to the class and respecting you for having the ability to make good decisions about how you're spending your time planning for that, how you're developing lessons for that, and how you're implementing those lessons.
How long were you up at Milwaukee, or are you still affiliated with them?
I'm still affiliated with them for 4 years.
And will the MTEA be assisting the KEA with any services?
Sure. Well,
down here,
one of the things that I'm bringing with me is the entire our union professional development course catalog, if you will. There's a large variety of offerings through the Milwaukee Center for Teaching and Learning. They're going to be available to Kenosha Education Association members. And this, obviously, it's a larger union, larger local up there, and they have a lot more diverse options. And we'll be bringing these things to bring all of that to Kenosha for our members. They'll have opportunity to participate not only in some of the Milwaukee's programs, but we'll be reinventing them here locally for members. And it's grown to be a really robust program in Milwaukee, and we're hoping to work with Kenosha members to develop programs that they're going to value as well.
One of the things that has been in the news a lot, and especially on social media a lot in the last 2 weeks, are some statements that Senator Johnson made about, I think he was trying to talk about technology in the classroom, making it possible to reduce staff sizes and things like that.
Sure.
But one of the things that we've seen over the last 10 years is a tremendous growth of technology in the classrooms. Does it help that much? Do you have any feelings about technology in the classroom? Electronic blackboards and computers that you can plug into?
It has made some things easier, but I'm also at the kindergarten level. I think it's used more in depth at a higher grade level. The kids have created their own little stories and research on animals in this app called My Story at the kindergarten level. I think it helps them become, a lot of them are already technology fluent with using them at their homes, but it has helped. And because now that the standardized tests are done on the computer, then that helps with facilitating that aspect of their education career.
There is an access issue with students who may or may not have access to a smartphone or internet or a computer at home. And that continues to be somewhat of a concern. A large amount of the work of teachers is done using computers for, helping to plan their lessons and, all those kind of things. It has been for many years. And there's a lot of different, ways that computers are used in classrooms for a variety of reasons. I think the idea that that's going to, anyone who's ever given a kid an iPad before knows what they use it for. Mm-hmm. And it's not like you put an iPad in the kid's hand and all of a sudden, oh my gosh, I have a young Einstein in my hand. There's a lot more that goes into the educational process than putting them in front of a screen. And I think that, Senator Johnson's ideas about that are kind of a little bit of Jetson's throwback maybe or something. But educators like to use technology because it is captivating for many students. It helps them track outcomes for students. It also is something that, as electronic devices become more ubiquitous, it does give students an opportunity to access, learning materials at home in an easier way sometimes too. And, things are shifting in that direction and educators are at the forefront of that and on top of it.
As a person with a media background, I've seen some things that work very well. For example, instead of having students do papers, some of those papers end up being video slideshows that they put together. And they get very involved in that because mm-hmm. they can get images and quotations and things like that off of the internet and put them together in a video project, and that kind of thing works very well. Also, reading assignments. This Achieve 3000 reading project that the schools got very heavily involved in. One of the things I noticed is that if the students were given reading assignments on their computers, something about a computer that it sucks you in and gathers your attention. The class would quiet down and settle down, and do the reading. On the other hand, the reference that Senator Johnson made was to learning more from about the Civil War from watching the Ken Burns special than from a teacher. And my observation on that is that if you're showing a video to a class, there are parts of the brain that are not engaged in watching a video. Mm-hmm. And so what the teacher has to be doing is guided note-taking, pointing out things, writing things on the board as they pass, because the students will just be viewing it like a television program, and maybe some of them will be highly motivated and some of them, a lot of them will not.
Well, I mean, how many years has Sesame Street been around and it hasn't replaced Ann's job? I mean, I don't even know how to comment on the idea that watching TV is going to make you smarter. Certainly people make their own choices, and when I was a kid, I remember I wasn't allowed to watch Dukes of Hazzard. My parents said no, and I watched MASH instead, and that was okay. And I learned later on that was a good choice my parents made, you know, that they, you know, shaped my intake of media that way. And, you know, I have a feeling that if you were given the opportunity, that most kids probably wouldn't choose Ken Burns as a option to view on YouTube. They would choose something else, and, you know, parents want to show them their children those kind of documentaries they can. It's all an option, but having that replace what happens in a classroom, I think, is pretty far-fetched.
I agree. And there needs to be a balance, because there needs to be interaction with the students. We also grow them socially, and they need to know how to work as a team. If they go on and, you know, whatever job they get, they have to be a team player. They have to be able to work with people. They have to have those social skills. So learning, plus the discussions, can become so rich, you know, when you're talking about a topic, and that should not be put by the wayside. That is just crucial.
Yeah, so many people don't realize that unlike college or a trade school or a place like Gateway, where we're sitting right now, the drill in K-12 education is at least 50% social. Mm-hmm. Maturity, teaching maturity, what in the parochial schools they call formation.
Watching television or watching a program doesn't help students develop ways to communicate with other people. It doesn't help them learn how to share their ideas better. And it doesn't help them learn that their voice and their opinions are important. And that's really what happens in classrooms. It's about sharing. It's about collaboration. Mm-hmm. How to work with other people. How to be productive. How to have a project with a positive, successful outcome. And those are just not things that you can absorb or, you know, watch a TED talk about and expect that it's going to change your life.
With regard to technology and testing, I'm told that testing is going to be less of an impressive thing as it has been the last couple of years. It takes so much time. But one of the things I notice about the internet testing, although it saves a lot of time correcting tests, it seems like with internet testing, what we're teaching kids is vocabulary instead of substance, because vocabulary is something that you can put on a multiple choice test. Vocabulary, dates, things like that. And particularly with regard to subjects like science or history, where you're trying to teach an ability to for creative thinking, for interchange of ideas to go on between people in the classes, where there is not just one correct answer. Particularly in history, there's never just one correct answer. There's always at least two ways of viewing things.
Yeah, the standardized testing is a huge issue among educators. In fact, the ESSA, Every Student Succeeds Act, which replaced the ESEA version of the No Child Left Behind, that was key, because that was just hundreds of thousands of contact by NEA members, National Education Association members, getting in contact with the senators and legislators that this needed to be changed. There is just way, way too much testing going on in our schools, and it is not healthy. There's just it overtakes the school year. And we even had a student at my school who on one of his answers answered it with, "This test is a waste of my time." So they are becoming numb to testing at a really early age. I have to test my students. I do a baseline and then each quarter so I can fill out their report cards because it's based on the skill attainment. And then we also do the PALS testing 3 times a year. So that is 8 times just in the kindergarten year that I am testing these students, and it just builds and builds and builds. And with the ESSA, we do not have to have the AYP, annual yearly progress stats anymore. And we are now given the opportunity to work with districts about which tests do we really need, because we want ones that are going to be meaningful, definitely not ones they want to use to harm teachers, because this test that really essentially means very little to the student could mean everything to a teacher's job, which is not a fair way to do it. That's not the goal of what testing should be or a student's progress.
Well, in the approximately 2 minutes that we have left, Chris is the new incoming interim executive director. Is there anything we haven't covered that you'd like to say, any cap you'd like to put on this?
No, I just think that the KEA is here, where the union represents teachers, educational assistants, and a variety of other educators in Kenosha Unified School District. We're working hard to develop innovative programs for our members. We're focusing on making their jobs easier and better, helping them do good work in the classroom. We have high expectations for all of our members. We want to help them be standout professionals, not only district-wide, but statewide. And we think that the Kenosha Unified School District is a great place for them to work and for people to work in general. And we're going to be working with the district to help make things better. That's kind of what our main goal is. If you have someone in your family who is a teacher or works in public education, have them get in touch with us. We'd love to talk to them about their ideas and talk to them about joining our union.
Okay, with that, I guess we'll wrap it up. This has been Education Matters, a program that we present weekly with a group of rotating hosts. In addition to this live broadcast on 10:30 on Saturday mornings, all of our programs are available on an archive. WGTD.org is the place to go. Click on Shows, get a page that says Education Matters, and go there, and you'll be able to see all of the shows. There are really several shows that have been done in the last couple of months that are really quite interesting. I'm going to make a list of those and post them on the net. And we also have a Facebook site, and you can follow what's happening in education there. And if you have any comments or you want to participate in the conversation, feel free to do that. So with that, we'll say goodbye and until next time, and thank you for listening.